Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to U.S. National Politics Online. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. Our co-host, Dr. Jerome Hyler. Today's show, Spreading Liberty Face-to-Face. Welcome to the show, Dr. Hyler. How are you this afternoon?
Thank you very much, Chauncey. Wonderful to be with you again this week.
This week's topic is addressed to every American who fears that the country is heading in the wrong direction. And if that direction is not reversed soon, prolonged hardship and suffering is what awaits future generations. Someone once put it like this, quote unquote, "A democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can only exist until the voters discover that they can vote themselves money from the public treasury. From that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidates promising the most benefits from the public treasury, with the result that a democracy always collapses over loose fiscal policies, always followed by dictatorship. The average age of the world's greatest civilization has been 200 years. These nations have faced progress through the following sequence," quote unquote, "from bondage to spiritual faith, from spiritual faith to great courage, from courage to liberty, from liberty to abundance, from abundance to complacency, from complacency to apathy, from apathy to dependency, from dependency back into bondage," quote unquote. Dr. Hyler, what do you mean by spreading liberty face-to-face?
Well, what is spreading through the country these days isn't liberty. It is its opposite, socialism. It is contained in the Democratic Party stated agenda, and it poses an enormous danger. Here's my basic premise, to repeat what you just said. Despite all President Trump is accomplishing, and that is a lot, the country is still heading in the wrong direction. And unless the country's course is reversed soon, the once bright promise of American life will grow ever dimmer. We are a nation marching down the tragic road straight toward fiscal oblivion. There's the colossal $20 trillion-plus debt held by the federal government, the reckless levels of indebtedness amassed by so many states and cities, and record-breaking student loan, home mortgage, credit card, and auto debt held by the people themselves. It often takes a long time for consequences to catch up to causes, but catch up is what they invariably do. If we pay attention to politics, we hear loud nightly calls for universal Medicare, which will quickly turn into Medicaid, a program that pays doctors so poorly that half the physicians in the country can no longer afford to treat patients that are on it. Democrats would forgive $1.5 trillion in student loan debt, letting the taxpayers bear that burden. A guaranteed living wage is urged by many of today's presidential candidates. A college education made free for all is also recommended. For the Democrats who make these proposals daily, it's cost no object. Neither is the extent to which government will regulate our lives. The Green New Deal, though predicated on fake science and manufactured hysteria, is to be enforced not by persuasion, but by social and legal compulsion. The institutions of tyranny, I'm afraid, are already in place. There are campus speech codes, politically correct certainties, silencing of climate deniers, removal of conservative professors and speakers from every college campus. Just grant the Democrats the power, or wait until they seize it, and even more onerous legal sanctions will touch every aspect and hour of our lives. Statutes will eventually dictate the temperature in our homes and businesses, the periodic allotment of gas for our cars, and the allowable use of electricity and appliances in our homes. But here's the good news. Since nearly no American will long put up with the deprivations a Green New Deal must inflict, the Green New Dealers will have to decide what's more important, saving the planet or holding free democratic elections. Then we will learn how much liberty means to the man and woman on the street. I, for one, wouldn't like to wait for that day to dawn on the nation.
Dr. Heiler, of course, the problem is that the majority of Americans are complacent and apathetic. Whatever they may think about on any given day, it isn't politics. I dare say even now, most can't tell you what the Green New Deal is or what it will mean for the country. Why are Americans so oblivious to public affairs? Shouldn't we be critical on their failure to pay attention to politics? Isn't it really ignorance, a willingness to let the country go down the tubes? Little more than a selfish concern for me, me, me?
It certainly isn't a wise course of action. But while Americans are acting foolishly in staying out of politics, I can't entirely fault them for their behavior. Ask yourself what makes them apathetic. To me, there are three basic answers, three roots of political apathy in our country. Apathy is a deep-seated American habit, and like any pattern of action or inaction, it needs to be fully understood before it can be changed. The questions we must ask are these. What beliefs and attitudes motivate political apathy? How reasonable are those attitudes? Are the apathetic really selfish? Let's look at three widespread sources of political alienation, three attitudes Americans hold which make political involvement such an unpopular American pastime. The first I call pragmatism. Apathy is a luxury the vast majority believes it can afford. Life is good. Families are free to busy themselves with the private preoccupations of daily life. Things closest to them mean the most and take up the greater part of their time. And there's nothing abnormal about that. What threat is there? That's what they say. In the hustle and bustle of daily life, most feel no threat from political tyranny. They can go to work, make a good living, even after taxes, celebrate special occasions, plan their vacations, or just go about their lives. What does politics have to do with anything, they ask? In short, Americans take the blessings of liberty entirely for granted. This is like patients smoking two packs of cigarettes daily for 20 years. Their breathing has not been noticeably affected. Their doctors haven't found any grave abnormalities. What's the problem? The problem, of course, is that eventually it will show up, often with debilitating symptoms or after it's too late to do anything about it. The housing bubble of the early 2000s also posed no visible problem for a long time. Not until the devastating crash of September 2008. Then the roof collapsed and millions of families lost their homes and half of their life savings. In the end, the pragmatic way is no way to live. We have to think carefully about what we're doing in the present and heed the lessons of the past if we are to avoid calamity in the future. Is the course we're charting today merely courting calamity tomorrow? Unfortunately, too few of us do the arithmetic. Pragmatism tells us if there's no immediate threat, there's no problem and no need to think. If a threat arises and there is a problem, there's no time to think. Just act. Do something. If it works, fine. If not, try something else. It's no way to run a country.
Dr. Heiler, beyond this popular propensity you call pragmatism, what are the other two explanations for Americans' political apathy?
The second one I call cynicism. It's very much with us. The political cynic, a.k.a. the country's forgotten men and women, couldn't care less about politics. They are apathetic and feel no guilt or shame about it. It's not that they've turned their backs on politics, but that the politicians have turned their backs on the people. They have let the American people down, and the people are merely saying to them, forget you. Apathy is merely a reaction to their leaders' ignorance, indifference, incompetence, deceit, corruption, you name it. Now, the cynic has two basic complaints with American politics. The first is simply that all politicians are crooks. You can't trust a single one of them. They'll say whatever you want to hear, but are in the pockets of big business and the special interests. Money talks, and anyone who says otherwise is either naive or stupid. Vote. Why bother? Though we can say that the cynic is making a gross overgeneralization, surely not every politician is crooked, his real error lies elsewhere. It's not that his conclusion is incorrect, but his response is inappropriate. If you read about a number of burglaries in your neighborhood, you don't conclude that all men are thieves and leave your front door open as you go away for the weekend. You secure your house as best you can and join others to demand stricter criminal penalties and more cops. The cynic's second complaint is to be found in the attitude that the political process gives the average citizen no real choice. They're all the same. No matter who you vote for, you get the same damn thing. They just say and do whatever they think will win the most votes. They never take a real stand on any controversial issue, and if they do, it isn't the same one they took 2 years or two campaign miles ago. Why vote when you don't know who or what you're really voting for? Now, the third root of apathy, besides pragmatism and cynicism, I call skepticism. Cynicism begins with the premise that things are wrong, but ultimately decides that nothing can be done about it. Skepticism shares the same basic premise and arrives at the same decision, but by a somewhat different route. If the cynic believes there's nothing we can do about the situation because all politicians are crooks or the same, the skeptic believes that there's no way of knowing what to do about it. The political skeptic may generally concede that the country is going down to the dogs and that something has got to be done about it. But for the life of him, he doesn't know what. He may have concluded that there are no answers where politics or economics are concerned. After all, the so-called experts can't even agree on anything. Just watch any debate on Fox TV. The conservative sounds really convincing, but when it's time for the liberal to respond, he often sounds just as convincing. Never forget, they both began their careers as attorneys, and attorneys are trained to present the best plausible case for whatever position they are called upon to take. Now, the cynic and the skeptic are both misguided. Great minds of the past and present can teach us great truths. We just have to seek out writers and speakers who can break down and pass down the truths that are borne out by all human history. Look what the founders did with the understanding they have of human history. They gave us the United States of America. Human understanding has triumphed over skepticism at least since the time of Socrates and Aristotle, if only at certain times. And if you sincerely believe that all politicians are crooks, not to be trusted, you surely can't afford to throw your hands up and walk away. There isn't a criminal alive who is capable of taking from you all that can be legally confiscated with one stroke of a politician's pen. And there is no police force in the world that will protect you from that kind of a crook. There's only a voting booth. Whatever else apathy may be, it is the furthest thing from selfishness. So what can one person who knows what's up do to improve the state of affairs? Every woman, man, or teen in the country who appreciates and cares to preserve the blessings of liberty and keep even more of the money they earn can wake their friends, neighbors, relatives, and coworkers and let them see what's at stake in the elections to come. There's a great deal that apathetic and patriotic Americans share in common. By appealing to these common values and traditions, the majority can be made to see they can no longer afford to remain silent. Common values and traditions can be saddled and hitched to liberty's bandwagon to pull the nation back to its origins. They can help spread liberty face to face and from the bottom up.
From those who are tuning in to U.S. National Politics Online, I'm your host, Chauncey Brown, and the co-host with us is Dr. Jerome Hyler. Today, we are talking about spreading liberty face-to-face. Dr. Hyler, so what are the four appeals that can bring our neighbors into the political process?
Okay, I just discussed three causes of apathy. Now let me name what I think are four solutions to apathy, to de-apathize the American public, if you will. First, an appeal to patriotism. To speak of patriotism is to take cognizance of America's founding principles. Understand them, and you will learn just how limited government was originally meant to be. As Jefferson proclaimed, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Since no number of men can agree to give government a power they themselves don't possess, and no one has a power to take away or give away what belongs to another, no government can claim or come by such a legitimate power. Government, in short, is meant to be a protector, not a provider. Here's how John Locke put it. For nobody can transfer to another more power than he has in himself, and nobody has an absolute arbitrary power over any other to take away the life or property of another, and having in the state of nature no arbitrary power over the life, liberty, or possessions of another, but only so much as the law of nature gives him to the preservation of himself, this is all he doth or can give up to the commonwealth so that the legislative can have no more than this. Unfortunately, this appeal to patriotism will probably not prove very successful. For one thing, the appeal will only last a few hours before and after each July 4th celebration. That's about how long Americans pay homage to the founding fathers and the invaluable documents they left behind. Beyond that, those founding principles are very abstract. It's not at all obvious how they relate to, say, ethanol or medical mandates, federal college tuition or housing assistance, food stamps for the poor, or public subsidies to farmers to offset tariff setbacks. There are connections, but the average American really can't be expected to see them. So the appeal to patriotism is wonderful, but probably not very practical. The second appeal is far more practical. I call it an appeal to the pocketbook. Should you hear a friend, neighbor, relative, or colleague complain about the difficulty of making ends meet these days, there's your cue. Step up to the plate and take your best swing. Here's what you can say. Listen, if you're paying upwards of 50% in combined federal, state, local taxes, and what hardworking family isn't, you're already half slave, half free. If it takes two incomes just to get by, it's because one income goes to pay the tax bills that are draining the quality of your lives. Now, that's not American, and I don't know why you would stand for it. How better would your family's life be if for every dollar you now pay in taxes, you could keep 80 cents for yourself? Well, that 80 cents is what the federal government alone takes from you in order to benefit every special interest that stakes a first claim on the fruit of your labor. A mere 20 cents of every dollar Washington spends annually funds the vital national defense and law enforcement and justice services that keep us all safe. It's time to send an army of Mr. Smiths to Washington under instruction to cut programs, close agencies, and shrink the size and intrusiveness of government. It's time to start making government what our founders intended for it to be, a protector, not a provider. That's the appeal to people's pocketbook. Very, very practical and very strong case for getting politically engaged. The third I call an appeal to patronage. In the 2016 presidential election, see candidates on all sides of the political spectrum, from the right to the left, joined in deploring the way Washington works. Donald Trump blasted the establishment, while Ted Cruz railed against the quote-unquote Washington cartel, and Bernie Sanders spat at the millionaires and billionaires who rigged the system to do what scoundrels do, line their own pockets. Nearly nothing drew cheers and ear-splitting chants from the stadium-sized rallies candidate Trump mounted as his solemn pledge to drain the swamp. What is getting understood is that when Congress confers special benefits on some, it necessarily denies equal protection under law to all. American politics has become the place where entitlement enthusiasts and counterfeit capitalists and their lobbies go to get special benefits at their neighbor's expense. And it's the forgotten men and women of the country, the ones who rose up in 2016 to put Donald Trump in the White House, who are paying for the privilege. But corruption doesn't begin with lobbyists pleading for special favors. It begins with polls of both parties thinking they have the lawful power to grant those favors. It's why we need battalions of Mr. Smith to descend on Washington, determined to clean out the swamp of public corruption that has grown so deep. Tell your friends and neighbors to go to the polls in 2020 and vote for those who will get government out of their pockets and off of their backs. Patronage is corruption. The fourth appeal is an appeal to pride. Though most Americans may not be able to recite the Declaration of Independence or name half of the complement of rights guaranteed by the Constitution, that doesn't mean they aren't proud of their country and enormously grateful for the quality of daily life it has made possible. Most Americans are abundantly proud and grateful for all their country has given them. American pride was nowhere more visible than in the aftermath of the devastating 9/11 attack. Overwhelming grief with the thousands of innocents who died and lost loved ones that day had to be expected. A bloodthirsty demand for vengeance against any who aided and abetted the terrorist murderers shouldn't surprise anyone. But why the unprecedented display of unfurled American flags? You could not walk along a New York City street without being treated to a cavalcade of flags flying from car antennas, residential porches, and neighborhood storefronts. There's an explanation. In the hustle and bustle of daily life, people tend to take the things they cherish mostly for granted. Only the sudden loss of the things we love causes us to appreciate how much they meant. Americans love their country and the free way of life it affords them. But 9/11 shattered what had been so casually taken for granted. On that day, the country learned that if a people do not feel safe, they cannot feel free. American flags were the people's way of saying, we want our free, safe, and blessed way of life back. We will surrender our freedom and safety to no one. As Americans, we have an awful lot to be proud of. We may not keep enough of our earnings, and the heavy hand of government may be pressing firmly on our brow, but the precious sphere of privacy that allows all of us to choose where, how, and with whom we will live is still available to us. Owing to all the thousands of life-saving, labor-saving gadgets, appliances, and inventions that free minds, free men, and free markets made possible, Americans enjoy a constant improvement in the conditions of daily life. It merely remains to expose the threat to that way of life modern-day liberal progressivism poses. All in all, the message should be clear as crystal and spread it as far and as wide as you can reach. The majority can no longer afford to remain silent. Now, I just urge all our listeners, and especially I'd like to give a shout out to my friends of the Long Island Oath Keepers who expressed their appreciation for my talk last night. I want to send a shout out to them and urge them once again to go out and let your neighbors know what's at stake and how important political engagement actually is.
Dr. Heiler, thank you so much for helping us to understand spreading liberty face to face. We'd like to thank all of our listeners for joining us here at U.S. National Politics Online. Join us next Tuesday at 4 p.m. for our next show on U.S. National Politics. Until then, today's show will be available as a podcast at Blog Talk Radio at U.S. National Politics or our new Facebook page, U.S. National Politics Radio Online. Please visit us and stay up to date for more information. Dr. Heiler, we'd like to thank you again for this very informative talk, and we look forward to having you on next week, Dr. Heiler.
Thank you very much. And Chauncey, if we have a minute or two left, let me just say, really from the bottom of my heart, to all our listeners and all who will be hearing this discussion on a podcast in the near future, it is not easy to interfere and disturb our friends, our neighbors, the people we talk to on the phone, and try to impose our ideas or interests or feelings about politics on them. It is not an easy thing. I am not comfortable doing it myself very, very often. But my God, Chauncey, if we who understand what's at stake do not begin waking our neighbors up and getting convincing them to become politically engaged, if we will not do it, who on earth will?
Dr. Heiler, thank you very much again. We want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in, and we look forward to having Dr. Heiler on our show next week again at U.S. National Politics Online. We thank you all once again, and God bless America.